This flash briefing was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Today is Monday, April 29th, 2019. I'm Michael Morale, Director of Multichannel Content for SMA News Today.
In a new study, a series of endurance tests were proposed that captured upper and lower body fatigue in SMA patients. This would cover both children and adult patients, and with different degrees of disease severity. Fatigue is a central complaint of SMA patients. Tiredness can arise out of simple tasks like lifting an arm to eat or walking short distances. These tests would help researchers and clinicians better evaluate and treat fatigue. The study was called Assessment of Fatigability in Patients with SMA, Development and Content Validity of a Set of Endurance Tests. It was published in BMC Neurology. In addition to muscle weakness, fatigue is fairly common but often overlooked with SMA. Patients can tire easily when doing even basic daily chores. Exactly how SMA leads to disabling fatigue is not fully understood. Some studies have pointed to abnormal development and maturation of the neuromuscular junction. This is the site of communication for nerve fiber and muscle cells. Here, it controls when and how muscles contract. Dysfunction at this site has been found in at least half of the patients with SMA, and it could possibly contribute to fatigue. However, tests that are sensitive enough to measure fatigue in SMA patients are lacking. Researchers with the University Medical Center Utrecht and the Netherlands Institute for Health Services Research have studied this problem. They collected information from existing literature and current perspectives of patients, researchers, and clinicians all dealing with SMA. Researchers then analyzed information using a five-step method to develop a clinical test. It's called the Consensus-Based Standards for the Selection of Health Measurement Instruments. The five steps are: 1. Defining what is fatigue. 2. Choosing how to measure fatigue. 3. Choosing what activities can be used to study and measure fatigue. 4. Choosing scoring and how the results can be best used. And 5. Doing a pilot test to determine how the fatigability test works. They assembled an expert panel and aimed to answer each of these. First, they defined fatigue as a decline in performance such as peak force, power, speed, and accuracy. Next, they came up with specific areas to measure feelings of fatigue. To do this, they used patient questionnaires about doing daily life activities. Some of them included leg function when walking, climbing stairs, showering, or running, then upper arm function when cooking, lifting a cup, brushing teeth, and then hand function, like using cutlery, typing, driving, or taking money out of a wallet. Since many patients reported a variety of activities that involved legs, arms, and hands, the panel decided to use every one of them as measurements. With this data, they then came up with a new and comprehensive exam that measures fatigue in each area. One test was selected to evaluate leg function in ambulatory SMA patients. It was the Endurance Shuttle Walking Test, and was adapted to SMA. To measure upper arm and hand strength, they used both the repeated 9-hole peg test and the box and block test. The endurance shuffle walking test measures how long a person can walk at a set constant endurance speed. The repeated 9-hole peg test measures finger dexterity. It consists of taking pegs from a container, one by one, then placing them into holes on a board as quickly as possible. The box and block test measures gross manual dexterity. It consists of a box with a partition in the middle. Using only one hand at a time, the person has to move as many blocks as possible from one side of the partition to the other in 60 seconds. 16 SMA patients were recruited from the Dutch SMA registry to do the tests. 8 had type 2 and 8 had type 3. They ranged in ages from 10 to 49. For control, they had 9 healthy adults and 1 teenager. Fatigue was measured both in physical terms and in cognitive terms. Patients completed all tests with a lower than expected dropout rate due to fatigue. 31% dropped out of the repeated 9-hole peg test, 45% on the box and block test, and 50% on the walking test, which was the expected dropout rate for all the tests. However, in the box and block test, they observed subjects leaning on the box, which, according to the researchers, shouldn't be allowed in testing, even though they were just compensating for fatigue. All three tests ended up being safe and helped to evaluate fatigue in SMA patients in slightly different ways. The researchers wanted to do these tests to achieve three main objectives. 1. Quantify endurance. 2. Generate clinically relevant outcome parameters. And 3. Cover a large part of the clinical spectrum of SMA. The study also established criteria to evaluate fatigue in SMA patients with types 2 to 4 and from all ages. But researchers recommended that these tests be further evaluated in larger and more varied patient groups. In conclusion, they expect the endurance test to be suitable for subjects aged 6 years and older, and for those who can move their dominant hand on their wheelchair table as minimal motor function.
Coming up next, I'll share one of my perspectives with you.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploregenetherapy.com.
Have you ever stopped to think about how your decisions affect other people? Growing up as a child, the decisions that I was allowed to make for myself only affected me. If I made a good decision, I would reap the rewards of my success. And if I made a bad decision, I would suffer the consequences of my actions. Making a bad decision as a child might have resulted in me getting grounded for a few days. Unfortunately, as an adult, if I make a bad decision, it may not only affect me. Now, if I make a bad decision, it affects those around me. When I first began my Spinraza treatments in September 2017, I thought about my decision for quite some time. It didn't take me long before I realized that there were four results that would come from the decision that I was about to make. We all play the what-if game, and this game that I was about to play gave me the following four questions that I had to seriously think about. What if, after I started my treatment, I'm able to do more for myself? What if, after I start my treatment, I'm able to get up and walk? What if, after I start my treatment, I don't get any stronger? And finally, what if, after I start my treatment, I get worse? The first three questions were easy for me to answer because I could deal with the results. But the fourth question regarding me getting worse was the one that I feared the most. What if I did get worse? How would I handle this? Having to make these decisions for myself were easy to answer, but what made these decisions more difficult for me to answer was that I knew that my decisions would not only affect me, they would affect those individuals like my family and my friends. I've never been a selfish person. I was lucky that I had parents that instilled a value system in me while I was growing up. They taught me, even as a young child, that it was always better to think of other people before thinking of myself. We've all heard the old adage that it's always better to give than to receive, and the theory of instilling a good value system in your child is about the same thing. Learning at an early age that my decisions affected other people as well as myself, I think, made me a better and stronger person. While I was tackling these four questions in my mind, I was cognizant of the fact that I had other people that I needed to consult. I was extremely lucky to find an amazing family who became my caregivers. I'm surrounded by a husband and wife, their daughter, and their two sons, along with their amazing, nearly six-year-old grandchild. They've been my caregivers for nearly 7 years now, and while making these decisions about whether or not to start my Spinraza treatments, I had to think about them as well. The love and the encouragement that I received from them was the key reason why I decided to go forth and put myself through these injections. I knew from the beginning that no matter what the outcome, they would be by my side. The moral of my story is that before you make a decision about something that could dramatically change your life, think of others and how they feel. Your family and friends are not just your family and friends. They are a support group that was designed over time and developed through a lot of hard work and love. Let your family and friends support you in your decision and surround yourself with those who give you encouragement but also give you a reality check every once in a while. As of today, I've received 8 injections of Spinraza And throughout my journey, my family and friends have been there through it all. They've shared in the highs and the lows and have helped me to overcome some of the frustrations that I've had to go through. I was lucky that I surrounded myself with some fantastic individuals, and I hope and pray that you're as lucky as I am. The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.